It's harvest time in western Michigan, 2 or 3 weeks late this year because of the cold spring and the wet summer. But the loads of grain have been lining up at the elevators during the past 2 weeks. Of course, harvest time isn't quite the same as it used to be, what with the widespread use of combines. Almost every farmer who raises any considerable acreage of grain nowadays owns his own combine. The harvest is over in a couple of weeks. It used to be strung out over 3 months or so. A generation ago, the grain was cut and fastened into bundles by a binder. Workmen then had to go along and gather up the bundles and place them in shocks in case of rain. If the farmer were lucky to get the threshers early, the shocks could be hauled directly from the field right to the thrashing outfit. But if any considerable weight was necessary, the grain had to be stacked. Stacking was something of an art. Stackers took pride in their ability to build a symmetrical stack and one which would shed water. Their watchword was always, keep the center high. After stacking, the grain usually went through a sweating process before it was threshed. Sooner or later, the big threshing rig pulled into the yard. It was powered by a steam engine, later by an oil-powered engine, later by a tractor. It separated the grain from the straw, spewing the latter out into a stack in the barnyard. It required a great many men to run this thrashing engine, haul the bundles from the stack or the field, collect and store or haul to market the grain, and build the straw stack. Generally, farmers shared with each other this work. Thrashing time was a big job for the women of the farm home, too. The mistress of the household took great pride in displaying her culinary prowess by preparing her tastiest dishes in tremendous quantities for the hordes of hungry men. All this is practically a thing of the past in western Michigan farms today. The combine does the whole job of cutting and thrashing the grain quickly, efficiently, in one operation. Few men are needed. In talking with Alvin Little of Little Brothers the other day, I inquired how many thrashing rigs still exist around Kalamazoo. He told me that he knew of only one. The connection of the Little family with the grain goes back a long ways. The family's pioneer in Michigan was Henry Little, who came here in 1831. He was a native of New York, born in 1797. At the age of 15, he was apprenticed to a millwright and learned how flour mills are built and operated. You know, it's interesting how the threads of industries cross. You may remember that a few weeks ago on Western Michigan at Work, we had a program about Fairbanks Morrison Company. We told how the Fairbanks brothers of St. Johnsbury, Vermont, perfected the platform scale that started the long and notable connection of the name Fairbanks with scales. Well, this Henry Little that we've been talking about was employed by the Fairbanks in 1827, and he aided them in perfecting that scale. When he came to Michigan, Henry Little settled first at Galesburg, then moved to Comstock, then Richland, or Gull Prairie. Between 1838 and 1840, he constructed flour mills at Pawpaw, Yorkville, and Kalamazoo. Henry Little lived to be 93 years of age. Before his death, his sons, George and Charles, were in the elevator feed and grain business. George Little purchased that same mill in Yorkville his father had built years before, in 1898. After operating it a few years, George Little sold this Yorkville mill to the Battle Creek Food Company. In the year 1904, he formed a partnership with A.K. Zinn of Galesburg, who already owned the Galesburg mill, to buy a large elevator in Kalamazoo. This elevator in Kalamazoo was constructed during the Civil War and was first owned by J.L. Sebring and Company. George Little bought out Mr. Zinn in 1908, and in 1912 he was joined by his brother Charles. That was the beginning of the firm of Little Brothers. Alvin and George R. Little, who are sons of the first George Little and grandsons of Frank Little, came into the firm in the 1920s. The present owners are these two brothers and Charles Force, operating the business as a partnership. Today, the firm has two elevators in Kalamazoo, one at Mendon, one at Vicksburg, and one at Climax. The firm employs about 50 men. In the beginning, the business was largely one of buying grain from the farmers and reselling it to mills and other users. That still is a major phase of the company's activities. Something like 500,000 bushels of wheat are purchased each year. The wheat produced in Michigan is a soft winter wheat, not particularly suitable for bread, but very good for cereal manufacture, pastry, and cookies. The government prices on wheat this year amount to $2.08 per bushel, That's the guaranteed figure. The farmer can get a loan on his wheat and store it at 1.5 cents a bushel per month. He does not pay for the storage, however. It can be held until next May 1st. But there's so much red tape to all this that the farmer will often sell his wheat outright for less than $2.08 a bushel. When I called at Little Brothers about 2 weeks ago, the price was $2 a bushel, and a farmer came in while I was there and sold his wheat for that. Little Brothers also buy corn, oats, barley, soybeans, buckwheat, and all kinds of field seeds. The company sells coal and a variety of other products used on the farm. A very important segment of Little Brothers' business is the preparation and grinding of balanced ration feeds for livestock and poultry. In addition to the well-known Purina feeds, Little Brothers grind and mix their own special feeds. There has been, you know, in recent years, a remarkable development in the production of special feeds for poultry and livestock. Here's an example of how this works. It used to be considered that it took 10 bushels of corn to make 100 pounds of pork. With corn at $1.40 a bushel, that would cost $14. $14, that is, to make 100 pounds of pork. But you can also make 100 pounds of pork with 5.5 bushels of corn and 40 pounds of supplement. The total cost of that would be just about $10, almost one-third less. We'll have more information on that point a little bit later. A successful business of this kind cannot consist of just selling to and buying from the farmer. A lot of know-how is required, not only in the manufacture of the feeds, but in the whole business of raising the birds or the animals. And you've got to have good stock to start with in order to get the best results. That's why Little Brothers operate a year-round hatchery, which turns out hundreds of thousands of chicks each year. Even these chicks have a brand name. They're called Gold Checker chicks. Little Brothers have brought in hundreds of pedigreed males and females to improve these chicks. They specialize in three breeds, White Rocks, White Leghorns, and New Hampshire Reds. The company does a follow-up on every chick they sell from their hatchery, and they have a remarkable record. The country over, about 80% of the chicks survive to the age of 7 weeks. Mr. Little showed me their accounts, which indicate that only 2.53% of the chicks from the Little Brothers hatchery died during the first 7 weeks period. The company is mighty proud of that record. So Little Brothers supply the poultry raiser with good stock and good feed. But that's not the end of it. A farm serviceman, Mr. Ed Bauer, is employed to call on farmers and to help them with their problems. Ed is a graduate of Michigan State College, and he's a former teacher of vocational agriculture. We're going to hear from Mr. Bauer right after this message from White Sales. As I said a moment ago, our guest tonight is Mr. Ed Bauer, field man for Little Brothers. Mr. Bauer, what are the problems that are most often thrown at you by the farmers on whom you call?
Well, Dr. Dunbar, those problems will vary according to the season of the year. Right now, many farmers are interested in this wheat problem.
Yes, I can well imagine that, the moisture in the wheat.
Well, the moisture is a problem, and also the damage. The sprouted kernels have we've had particularly quite a lot of sprouting in the white wheat. The red wheat has not been too bad. Mm-hmm. Most farmers are interested today in what this wheat will bring them.
Well, now, I suppose they have to take a pretty heavy discount on it, don't they?
Well, that will vary, of course, depending upon how bad the wheat is damaged. Normally, the red wheat is carrying very little, if any, damage, while some of the white wheat will run from 5 to 50% damage.
What do you have to do, sort out this sprouted wheat and throw it away?
Well, no. The wheat is graded for discount, and the wheat all go through. However, the quality of the flour that is made from this wheat is not as high as of good quality wheat.
Oh, I see. Well, now I suppose at other times of the year, your problems mostly are connected with growing animals.
Yes, mainly I would say that our problems are dealing with feeding and breeding and management and marketing of farm products, mainly in livestock.
Now, do you call on farmers at their request only, or do you sometimes just make the rounds to see how they're getting along?
We do both. We make calls on request and also in calling on our customers and prospective customers.
Do you think, Mr. Bauer, that most farmers today recognize the need for a scientific approach to their problems?
Yes, I would say that the majority of the farmers are very much interested in getting all of the help that they can. They seek information from county and federal sources as well as from commercial concerns as little brothers.
They know that they can't farm the way their fathers and their grandfathers used to do and make very much money these days.
Yes, that's very true.
Now, to be a little bit more specific, Ed, what are some of the requests that are thrown at you from time to time? I think our listeners might be interested in some of your experiences.
Last week, I'll give you an example. When I was at one of the branch elevators, a poulterman had called in and said that his pullets weren't doing very well. And in going out and calling on him, we found that the pullets were in a rather crowded condition with not enough feeders and waters.
He kept them confined?
No, they were in rain shelters and were able to get out during the day, but the feeders and waters were kept inside the rain shelters, which did not encourage the birds to come out. Probably one of his big factors was that they were too crowded at night, and there wasn't enough feeder and water space, which made the pullets grow a little bit uneven.
I suppose that you have to do quite a lot of reading and study to keep up on all the latest developments in this field.
Well, we try to keep up with the research work that is done at the various colleges and at commercial concerns. We try to visit some of these research farms and also attend feed conventions and so on to keep up on the latest things.
I think you told me that Purina maintains a research farm, didn't you?
Yes, they have their research farm at St. Louis, and I spent a couple days down there about a year ago touring their farm.
Mm-hmm. How do you divide your time between Kalamazoo, Vicksburg, Climax, and Mendon?
Well, I normally spend 1 day a week in each of the branch elevators and 2 days a week around Kalamazoo.
Mm-hmm. And do you talk to farm groups as well as to individuals?
Yes, we oftentimes have requests to speak to veterans institutes and farm groups of various kinds, and Boys and Girls 4-H Club groups and FFA groups and so on.
Ed, do most feed companies like Little Brothers maintain a field man such as you are?
Well, I don't know if most of them do. I would say that the progressive ones today are making a step in that direction.
It's not only a matter of selling the product, then. It's a matter of seeing that it's properly used.
That's very true. Today, we've gotten away from the idea of setting a bag of feed on the dock and have the farmer take it away and feed it the best way he knows how. We are very anxious to see that he does get good results from that feed.
Ed, I've seemed to notice as I visited the area, particularly at the county fairs, a great many young people that look very alert and on the ball to me who are going into farming. Is that a general situation?
Yes, I think it is, where the young boys have an opportunity to start farming with their fathers and are able to take quite an active part in it. They are staying on the farm and doing a nice job.
Well, you must have an interesting job, Mr. Bauer. Thanks a lot for telling us about it. And that brings to a close our story of another industry where you will find Western Michigan at work.